This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Is that the way it works?
I don't know.
Can you eat crystal meth and brownies?
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, a man who gyrates more than the stock market, Rick S.
Hey, Mike. Ooh. That was very clever.
Did you like that one?
Yeah. I mean, weird, but...
Yeah, a little weird, yeah.
A little weird. I'm not sure where to go with it, but...
A little weird. Rick, what is this? 2 or 3 weeks in a row. I don't know what's going on. This is crazy.
It's gyrating.
It's like, what, Jabberjaws? What were you talking about before the show?
Indeed, Jabberjaw, 70s cartoon icon. Talk. But actually, that reminds me more of Ben Bernanke this week.
Huh?
With his all, don't worry about things. I'm going to come out and lock rates through 2013.
Yeah, that worked for like a day.
Yeah, and I can't see any potential downside in the Fed Reserve locking itself in for 9 quarters. Great.
Well, by the time this show comes out, we are recording this on Wednesday evening. Who knows what the stock market will be doing. This is fun every day. Up to 500, down 500. Up 500, down 500. I'm glad I'm not in that industry. Okay, lots to cover this week. We're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. Amber is back with her research minute. And then we have Chris's What's Up With That? So let's get started. Daniela, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Okay. Much ado has been made this week over Arne Duncan's announcement that he'll offer waivers for NCLB accountability requirements if states adopt a set of reforms of his choosing. Is this good or bad policy?
Waivers good, conditions bad.
It's novel policy.
Hold on, Rick. Now we know there's a lot of people this week who've made the case that, look, he's not doing anything different than Margaret Spellings did when she created out of thin air, allowing for states to do growth models instead of normal AYP, when she made other major changes to the law. It's the same thing.
Believe that for a second, so go ahead and...
No, I don't.
So go ahead and rebut yourself.
And I don't even, look, I'm not somebody who's in the habit of defending Margaret Spellings either.
Or NCLB.
Well, right.
And now, who are these legions who are making this argument?
Oh, Andy Rotherham and some of the other NCLB stalwarts.
Who else?
There are a few. Oh, Charlie Barone, for example.
Are you convinced by this argument?
I am not convinced by this argument. No, look, we have to see what comes out, right? Let's see the details. But if he's talking about, for example, saying if you want to get flexibility, you have to sign on for college and career ready standards, that's a new condition, a mandate that's nowhere in the law. It is not just saying, I'm going to provide limited flexibility. Like, okay, I'll let you do something a little bit different with AYP, like keep your annual targets where they are right now, or tweak the way you do end size. That's the kind of thing that Spellings said, or measure growth in a different way. This is saying if you want X, you must do Y.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's your analogy, Rick? You understand how it had a post that came out this week on this topic.
Yeah, no, and I think my analogy is you would think Obama partisans would be sensitive to this, that a President Perry or a President Romney could in January 2013 say, that Health Care Reform Act, here's the deal. If you actually embrace Paul Ryan Medicare reform and get rid of Medicaid and start giving your folks in Medicaid vouchers instead, we'll let you out of all the rest of Obamacare.
Right.
It's just a conditional waiver.
It's a conditional waiver. Same thing with No Child Left Behind, right? If you want out on these parts of No Child Left Behind.
I'll tell you what, you adopt vouchers, you adopt a moment of silence and you turn around schools, you do abstinence education. These are all conditions which are embodied within NCLB.
I love the school.
No problem.
I think that is what we need for our turnaround schools is definitely prayer.
Prayer?
I mean, that would be the Perry approach.
Can't hurt.
No, I think that's right.
And, but it's just astonishing that these guys... In the administration and that their defenders don't seem to have any interest in acknowledging or kind of wrestling with these complexities.
Look, this is hubris, plain and simple. Look, they've gotten results before with Race to the Top, with some of their bully pulpit stuff, where they've seen state policymakers change their ways because of their action. Iowa was going to cut funding for early childhood, and Duncan spoke out on it, and they reversed course. So this gives them this great sense of power. We know what's right, and if we, come out with the right incentives, we can change the course of history. Dangerous, dangerous, dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, topic number two.
Okay. The results from Wisconsin's recall elections are in, with Republicans keeping 4 of 6 seats and the Senate majority. What does this mean for union education initiatives?
So, Rick, and there, again, a debate. People on the left saying, look, this is kind of a draw. This isn't a big victory or loss either way. How do you take that?
I don't know. I mean, I remember Randy Weingarten in March stood up and raged. She thundered about the betrayal and cowardice of the Republicans in the State House, threatened doom. I mean, I think a lot of folks were surprised that only 6 Republican senators were recalled in the end. I think the early anticipation was of the 19, it was going to be more like 8 or 10 or 12. And so first they only targeted 6. The union spent months. They put, you know, literally millions of dollars, thousands of man hours. They flew in their national organizers. $33 million was spent on the 9 Senate seats. They couldn't even beat Luther Olson, the terrific guy who's chair of the, you know, Republican chair of the Senate Ed Committee. After all that, this is just a huge black eye for the union. Michael Fletcher in The Washington Post called this just a devastating setback for the Dems and for unions. If you're a conservative in another state now, if you're a conservative governor, you've got to feel like you're somewhere, you know, somewhere pretty close to green light on your ability to move forward. The only other thing to keep in mind is that Wisconsin went for Kerry in 04. Obama won Wisconsin by 14 points in 08.
Yep.
So this is pretty friendly terrain for Dems and for labor.
So, but now people will say, look, I mean, there's a lot of money spent on the right as well in these elections. Do we know if that money matched what the union spent?
We have no idea. But absolutely, the right came in and spent a lot. But look, on union-friendly terrain, on the place that the unions chose to make, you know, this was going to be their big stand, that they were going to humiliate and crush Walker and the forces of reform, the best they could do was ultimately ding 2 out of 19 senators who crossed them.
Right. Look, and on policy grounds, I mean, some of what Wisconsin did is definitely already reaping positive effects. I mean, you know, getting employees to pay more into their pension systems has corrected what was going to be a real train wreck going forward on pensions, and it pretty much solved the problem. This is good stuff. It also, on healthcare, reining in those costs has meant that there's a bunch of districts in Wisconsin that have avoided layoffs because they're able to cut costs through the healthcare stuff. So, you know, this you can say, look, this is a political victory and a policy victory at the same time.
And I mean, the unions needed this one, right? Because now you got Michigan, you got Ohio, you got Idaho, you got places where they took other defeats.
Yeah.
And what they really needed was a smashing victory here to scare off others.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Republican starting to brainstorm for the coming session, you know, again, you're feeling pretty good about your ability to move forward with without too much fear.
Okay, topic number 3.
Okay, Mike, as you mentioned earlier, we're recording this on Wednesday evening. Our event, Ed Reform Idol, will be tomorrow morning. So that all being said, we've got 5 strong candidates coming to Fordham tomorrow to vie for the title of Ed Reform Idol. The states, we've got Florida, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Wisconsin. Who do you think will win?
So let me clarify. What this contest is about is which state was the reformiest in the 2011 legislative session. Okay, so that limits, you know, so we're not talking about over the long run. That's why you don't see, for example, Massachusetts on the list or maybe a Colorado. We're saying just in the past legislative session, who did the most to push school reform forward? There's some other states you could argue should be up there. Maybe Michigan, maybe Idaho, maybe Nevada. Can you think of any others, Rick? That
Idaho, yeah, potentially. But no, that makes sense. That's a reasonable way to limit it.
So you look at that, and I think we'd all have to agree that Indiana is the odds-on favorite here.
Well, I mean, and part of American Idol is always, right, the kind of appearance as much as a substance. That, and honestly, Indiana is sending, I guess, Tony Bennett in tomorrow morning.
Right.
And if there's anybody who's going to be able to effectively show a little leg, it's Tony.
Yeah.
He's charming. He's forceful. He's good looking. So
he's got the same name as a famous singer, which kind of is a nice tie-in.
Yes, it works well for the singer nowadays because Tony is such a glam star. Yeah. So I just got to figure these other guys are going to be battling their way uphill.
I mean, look, you look at Indiana, they, you know, pushed forward on choice dramatically with the most expansive choice program in the country right now. You know, serious work on pension reforms, serious work on reining in collective bargaining. And according to Bellwether Education Partners, you know, which is no conservative outfit, they had the best teacher quality law this session as well.
Mm.
Even better than last year's Colorado teacher effectiveness law.
Mm.
So they're looking pretty strong. But I think we're going to see a lot of grassroots support for Illinois as the sort of bipartisan darling of the group. And I think they'll be going for that play. You know, look, Peggy Lerner.
started at 7:36, baby.
Yeah, which I know you're a big fan of.
A big bill, ambitious. A lot of people in Florida.
Yeah, and then look, Peggy Lerner, state senator from Ohio. Kate Walsh's sister.
Whoa.
Kate Walsh of NCTQ.
Working the relationship angle, huh?
Coming in to maybe see if Ohio can sneak through with the victory. We are a little biased on that front, so I'll be careful with that when I do my hosting. All right, so who do you think? You call it for Indiana? Is that your call as well?
They all deserve to win.
Oh, Rick, that is not a Rick Hess sentiment. We're all winners. You don't buy that crap. Come on.
I don't know. It's hard, man.
This is why Rick doesn't vote in elections.
You're a betting man. Come on.
I could lay odds. If I had to bet who's going to win,
yeah.
I think I'm going to go Illinois because I think they'll be able to activate kind of that whole defer kind of Democrat Fred reform folk.
Yep.
And that's the only state in this mix where this stuff is really driven by Democrats.
Yep.
So I think if I had to bet somebody to surprise, yeah, it'd be
interesting. And the others might split the conservative leaning vote.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. We'll find out who.
We know those conservatives are going to be spending a lot of time tomorrow watching CNBC, and their stock portfolios bounce, whereas Dems are much less attuned to these kinds of things.
You heard it here first. Okay, that's all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Now it's everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, your levels are good. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
What's been going on? Hey, we were just talking about how you're going to China this fall.
Mm-hmm. Going to China. Shanghai, baby. Beijing. Gonna do some touring. Gonna meet with the Chinese Minister of Education, apparently.
Quick, who is it?
No idea. Do you know?
Lee? I think it's Lee.
Is that Lee? How many Chinese people are named Lee? Is that just a shot in the dark?
Yes, exactly. Is that politically incorrect?
I think. I think just a little bit.
Really?
Yosemite. All right.
Really?
It's like saying Smith. I mean, that's not politically incorrect to say Smith. Oh, you're going to England. Maybe the guy's named Smith. All right. Well, maybe not. You know, the amazing thing is China, you know, Checker is a true China hater, and
yes,
he is allowing Amber to go and paying for it.
This is true.
Nice.
Open-minded. He's nice. Opening his mind.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of Smith, if you remember on Sex and the City, Kim Cattrall's that boyfriend, the actor, was Smith Jared.
Huh. Oh, interesting.
First name Smith.
What a random thought.
But first name Smith. You don't get that all the time.
Okay. So, Amber, what are we talking about today?
Shoo. All right. So we've got the latest iteration out of NCES that compares state proficiency standards a la cut scores in 2007 to those on NAEP. We've had this report many times, but here we go again.
Oh, good.
No good news here again. Only one state set their proficiency cut score for 8th grade reading at the proficiency level on NAEP. Who do you think it is?
Massachusetts.
I'm going to go Oklahoma.
South Carolina. None at grade four. In grade eight math, South Carolina and Massachusetts both set their proficiency rates at NAEP proficient level, and just Massachusetts at grade four. So 35 states cut scores in 2007 are set at the dismal below basic NAEP standard. That number was slightly better at 22 in 2005. That said, let's throw them a bone here. Some of the states did make changes to their testing systems between 07 and 09. And some did move to more rigorous proficiency standards, but not all. Tennessee, Mississippi, and Rick's Oklahoma are some of the states that consistently have low NAEP score equivalents across grades, across subjects. Finally, the rigor of state standards, this was kind of interesting, is not always associated with higher performance on NAEP. The relationship tends to hold more at grade four reading and math than at grade eight reading and math. Still in all, yet another report that says states are setting low standards for proficiency, something to ponder as states gear up for Common Core, and a question as to what these Common Core cut scores are going to look like eventually.
Boom.
Boom.
Boom. So this really follows on the groundbreaking study.
Groundbreaking,
that Amber
people.
Led several years ago, the Proficiency Illusion by the Thomas B. Fordham Institute.
Which I think followed on the groundbreaking work by Peterson and Hess, which pointed this out in EdNext. And these have all found
in a much less sophisticated way.
Yes. But these have all found exactly the same things, no matter how sophisticated.
Yes. This is true. No, and it is interesting that we've got a number of states that did raise their standards somewhat. And you know, you look at that and you kind of puzzle about it. What might have caused that?
But, you know, the other thing is interesting is you look at the vast majority of states are way below proficient.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when we start thinking about what happens in free countries when we have common standards and common cutoffs, the vast majority will frequently predominate. which does raise really good, hard questions for Common Core supporters.
You know, I think, look, there was a NAEP study a few years ago where they tried to estimate what the sort of college and career readiness level would be on NAEP. And it was somewhere between basic and proficient. So, you know, I think you can make the case that proficient is a very high bar. It's aspirational. It's probably more than you need to succeed in college. And so, you know, if Common Core comes out with something between basic and proficient, hopefully closer to proficient, that's going to be a high bar. And what it means is that, the results...
But since this is a voluntary state-led effort, those states, a majority of them, once they're using this thing, might very well start to suggest that a reasonable level is slightly lower than
because,
it is.
Because if they don't, these test score results are going to be in the much gutter. More dismal than they are today.
And that process tends to follow a familiar pattern.
We shall see.
We don't like to look badly, do we, if we're a state?
But again, Rick, it can't get much worse.
Really?
Well,
famous
I'm not going to back you on that one, Mike.
Yeah, it could get worse, but I don't think it's likely. Okay. What's the song, Amber?
All right, well, I hear Rick suggested this one. Since this is a sad, sad state of affairs regarding proficiency levels, we have Sad Songs Say So Much by Elton John.
Sir Elton.
Guess that.
John, I just seem to like him more and more as I get older. Okay, it's now time for everyone's second favorite, Chris's What's Up With That?
Woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Telephone rang and you wanna chat? Well, sit on down and tell me what's up with that? What's up with that? Yes, sir.
No, I'm just teasing, Chris. You might be some people's favorite. I just don't know. We don't really have good data on that. But tell us what you got for us this week.
All right. Well, since entering the education reform world, I've heard lots of complaints about getting rid of our school's bad teachers. I mean, just because someone loves doing something doesn't mean that they're necessarily good at it. But for all our talk about bad teachers, what is being done about bad principals? I was appalled by a recent report out of Boone County, West Virginia, where a public school was shut down because of something the principal and a teacher were found to be doing in the principal's office.
Uh-oh.
You might think you know where this is going, but no, they weren't having sex. They were smoking. Catch the drift now? Probably not, because they weren't smoking pot. It was crystal meth. In fact, traces of the drug were found not just in the principal's office, but in the air ducts, hallways, and bathrooms of the school as well. What's up with that? Think that private schools are any better? Think again. In the Bronx, the 200-student primary school, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, has been operating for 2 years now under the direction of a, well, let's just say unique individual. The principal, Frank Borzilleri, sorry for the pronunciation there, is better known for his work as an author of white supremacist literature, that is. Apparently, the pastor in charge of hiring this man said that, quote, he didn't see any cause for concern. Seriously? What's up with that? To me, this is absolutely astounding. These are the people in charge of overseeing our teachers and developing a positive culture in our schools. A principal should be highly valued and thoroughly examined prior to being hired. But somehow, the likes of men such as these who contend that, quote, diversity is a weakness, or spend their time smoking ice in the workplace, ascend to the rank regardless.
All right. Now, first of all, let's be honest here. We don't know that the guy was smoking meth when he got hired as a principal. I mean, this could have been something. I can imagine some NCLB opponents saying it was all the pressure from standardized testing that made him turn to this awful, awful drug.
How do you get crystal meth in the ductwork? What were they doing? How much meth were they actually hitting?
I didn't know that you smoke meth. I have no idea. Is that the way it works?
I don't know.
can you eat crystal meth and brownies? Sorry, that's totally unrelated.
They actually, on a good note, they realized that the teacher who was conducting a crystal meth lab in his home was not using the school to conduct a meth lab. So he wasn't cooking it there. He was just smoking it there. So, I mean,
this is just like Breaking Bad.
Bingo.
This is just like Breaking Bad.
Except that teacher was really, really smart and doesn't cook or smoke in the school.
How did they get busted, I wonder?
I'm not sure.
All this talk about cameras in the classroom? Maybe we need a camera in the principal's office, keeping an eye out for those who are smoking a little crystal meth.
Yeah, that's the solution, Rick. Come on, you're the guy who says we shouldn't respond to every scandal with the new policy.
I was actually being sarcastic.
All right, I'm trying to explore, for the record. We're not actually saying that we should pass new laws in order to outlaw.
I got
to
say, if we think a substantial percentage of our 95,000 principals are smoking crystal meth, I'd say we have bigger troubles. Than the crystal meth itself.
I think there's going to be a law in West Virginia soon that says, you know, an annual inspection of air ducts to check for crystal meth. I could see that getting on the books. So just watch out what you say, Rick.
Boone County, is that for real?
Yeah, it really. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, well, before Rick says something impolite about West Virginia, we're going to say that's all the time we got for this week.
I love West Virginia. I used to teach baseball there.
I thought you were going to say smoke crystal meth there.
No, man. Taught baseball, went to drive-ins. I'm a big fan of West Virginia.
All right, good. Well, until next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.